We hide
it's one of the perks of PHP.
Oh. At least get rid of water. At least get rid of plastic.
Yes. Yes.
I'd like walking there, and it takes me about 15 minutes. Which is not bad. It's nice walking. Yeah.
You got a plan for it,
right? Well, yeah, I was planning for it, but then I got a phone call, and
it's funny how that goes.
Yes. So currently, Katrina, Mario, and Mike are all on the phone.
Okay.
And they're the only ones who said they were calling in, so I don't. Well, everyone else is here, so we're good.
Whenever you want to get started.
Ian, did you say you were going to call roll? Do you like my list, or do you have one?
I'll just do it.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good, you too.
All right. So we're ready?
Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting of the Rental Services Commission for the City of Portland to order. It is about 2:35 p.m. and we're at the Portland Housing Bureau office. First, Ian's going to handle roll call.
Well, I'll just... thanks, Christian. I'll just start with the folks on the phone. If you could just say present. We'll start with Katrina.
Present.
Margot.
Present.
And Mike.
Present.
Okay, thanks. We'll head around the table. Ian, here.
Deborah, here.
Yoni, here.
Laura, here.
Christian, I am here. Okay, let's see, minutes. So everyone had a chance to review the minutes from last meeting. I believe it went out with Stacey's email last week. And if so, I'll, of course, entertain a motion to approve. And we'll also let the record show that Christina has just arrived and is officially present.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Yoni. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Ooh.
So many seconds.
I'll let staff decide who won the photo finish there.
With instant replay.
Yes.
Any official discussion? Anyone notice any errors, any amendments, anything like that? Not hearing anyone jumping up. And then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those on the phone, you want to chime in? Maybe.
Aye. No.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Perfect. And we're good. Okay, staff update. Mr. Andreas.
So the first thing is, as I believe all of you know, council has had two hearings on the fair access and renting council agenda item, which is the combination of the screening criteria and security deposit proposals. They have decided to wait a little bit before taking a vote. I believe the date I heard was April 25th, if that sounds right to people. So as far as we know, that is when we will have a new update about those proposals. The RSC letters and supplemental letters have been submitted into the record. So those are part of the public record and went to all the council offices. From that, I anticipate we'll be having conversations in the future about the format of letters and how people felt about that process. But I wanted to close the loop there. The Rules and Bylaws Committee began meeting. At their first meeting, they discussed scope of where they wanted to go as a committee and decided that they wanted to deal with the question of public testimony and how the commission responds to public testimony as part of a larger conversation of the commission, its process, and how it functions. Do either of the co-chairs want to add anything to that?
Well, I would just add, and maybe you had it in what you said, Andres, if you did, but I think we also discussed that there's a pretty large gap between process and what's actually happening and how the bylaws are written. So a fundamental goal is to get those all to line up.
And then since the last meeting, the Metro has been reaching out to different advisory bodies asking for input on the Metro housing bond. They asked to be on the agenda for the May RSC meeting. However, the May RSC meeting, we're currently slated to discuss the building code changes from the Quality of Rental Housing Work Group. And I anticipate that that will take the majority, if not all, of the agenda time. So what we are recommending as staff is they've also asked to meet with the Fair Housing Advisory Commission, which meets the second Tuesday in May, and they would be from 3 to 5. And so what we would like to do is have the RSC and FHAC both meet then to discuss the Metro bond. It would be an additional meeting, so if members are able and interested, they could attend that meeting and provide input on behalf of the RSC to Metro regarding the different priorities and considerations as they execute that bond, and then to keep the regularly scheduled May RSC meeting on the 21st, which would discuss the building code amendments. So I wanted to put that out there to see how you all felt. Are there any concerns?
Can I ask two quick questions? So the first is, and I'm looking at this document, the RSC work plan. So for May 21st, we have Quality Rental Housing Work Group amendments here. Sorry if this was mentioned. This is sort of a carve out or is related to the whole slate of topics that we're talking about right now?
The quality of rental housing?
Yeah.
It is a separate topic.
Okay, so it's a separate topic. So, and it's just being slotted in?
In between the short and long-term conversations on rental registration.
Okay. Second question was, for the Metro bond conversation, is it necessary to have a quorum?
No. So this is they're interested in getting input from all of the different community partners that the Housing Bureau engages with through its advisory bodies, and so they wanted to make sure they're reaching out to everyone and getting as much input as possible. But given this commission's workload and how much it has on its agenda, it just seemed like it might be easier to have members who are able and interested attend a separate meeting and to keep trying to get through the RSC's work plan as scheduled.
Okay, great. Sorry, one more question. So on the May 21st meeting, if we, or when we hear this topic, Quality Rental Housing Work Group Amendments, what's the role expected of this group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's if people aren't looking at the work plan, now would be probably a good time to take a look at it. So on it, we have, at the top, the RSC's work plan stands right now. And at the bottom, the staff proposal is to add in May a conversation about the quality of rental housing work group. So they met in 2000, well, they finished meeting in 2008, put out a report, included recommendations on how to make rental housing safer and more habitable. And due to a variety of issues, including the economic recession and lack of staff at BDS, those recommendations were not able to be implemented then and are being implemented now. So they formed a task force that has advised them as they have gone through their work. However, a number of partners who were part of the original Quality of Rental Housing work group are now part of the Rental Services Commission. And so both recognizing the role those organizations had in the original plan and wanting to ground the recommendations now more than 10 years since they were made, they wanted to bring it to the RSC as kind of a final proofing, saying you all talk about rental housing and are experts in your respective fields. Here's the report, here are the recommendations. Is there anything that we should adjust, anything that we should consider as part of making those changes through code amendments?
I just have a quick question. So I want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So some of the changes were implemented, specifically about the enhanced inspections program. Do you know to what level they're looking for RSC input? Are they looking for yes or no on the recommendations that they're then going to follow and then make the changes? Or are they hoping to make all of the changes with the Quality of Rental Housing Work Group and just looking for sort of input on how to do it? Or, can you dig a little bit deeper?
Mm-hmm. So I do not know if they're making... if they are implementing all of the recommendations from the work group. I think what they're looking for from you is some time has passed and the recommendations were designed to address some systemic problems that existed then and very well could exist now. Those problems might have shifted or changed, and so part of it is making sure that this still addresses those same root concerns and any changes in those concerns since 2008 to today. And I think they are interested in a more robust conversation than simply, yes, this doesn't meet it, no, this, yes, this does meet it, no, this doesn't meet it. They're interested in hearing from all of you as experts in more descriptive feedback, and if there are substantial changes needed to be made, they would be interested in making those changes.
Can we have a request for them to go through that document and talk about which things have been implemented, which have not, which are in progress, and which ones have been on the back burner? Because, I mean, it's 134 pages, so it's a pretty robust document with many recommendations, I think, across five different categories. So if we can get a little bit more specificity, that'd be great.
Yeah, the executive committee requested a short high-level summary of this, and I've passed that request along to them, and so they're working on putting something together that gives you kind of an overview of the changes that are being made, and I can ask for that to be included as part of it as well.
Thank you.
Anything else? Good. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Deborah. Sorry, I didn't even see you.
So I was curious, who is on that work group, and is that being run out of this bureau or a different bureau?
I do not know. It's from BDS, and I can ask them to share that when they present.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Okay. Next on the agenda, rental registration fee structure. Back to you, Andreas.
So the main topic for today's agenda is the registration fee structure. So to give some context to this conversation, the idea is if council were to decide to have a fee for rental registration, how should that be structured? And what that means is what format of a fee, how to put that in easier words. There are different options in how to set up a rental registration fee separate from the amount of the fee. So some places have a base fee per landlord or per property, and a scaling fee per unit. Some places have a flat fee where one unit is registered at this price, multiply that by the number of units. Some places the per unit fee increases as a landlord has more units, or it decreases as a landlord has more units. And so those are the considerations in discussing how a registration fee would be structured if one was implemented in the city of Portland. Some additional framing for that conversation. I know you all in the past have expressed both at commission meetings and in your check-ins that the most staff can do to guide conversations to be productive and realistic, the better. So in full disclosure, at this time, Housing Bureau staff, Revenue Division staff, and jurisdiction partners at other places that we've consulted with have leaned towards a per unit fee that is flat or as close to flat as possible. So as always, we are interested in hearing your perspective, particularly if there are extenuating concerns with a flat per unit fee or a close to flat per unit fee. But I also wanted to make it clear kind of where things are leaning right now.
And then also just to clarify, if I remember correctly, obviously we're not at any, we're not close to a point of actually talking about numbers, actual dollar amounts. This is just strictly the structure of the registration.
Correct. So we anticipate that a fee amount would be decided by council and would likely be a budget and political decision made by the council offices together. So we could see full cost recovery of all the Housing Bureau rental services programs, only the ones related to rental registration, a portion of them more than what is currently covered. And so it can go a lot of different ways. And that conversation we expect will be presented at some point along with the budget, but we don't anticipate, there isn't as much room there for technical recommendations. And so instead, what we're steering towards is focusing on how should it be structured and are there concerns in the structure or implementation of a fee that could be something that influences council's decision.
And also I would assume the more complicated the equation is to figure out what a landlord owes as part of their fee, one creates a scenario where we might have people unintentionally not paying the right amount or something, but also I would assume it creates more cost on the actual staff and administrative side.
Yeah, right. The revenue division in particular is feels very strongly about a simple fee if they're the ones administering it.
Well, no one's jumping to the table, so maybe I'll throw something out just to kind of start the thought process. I mean, obviously there's the just simple straightforward of here's the what we just determined the budget is for whatever services these registration fees are going to cover this year. This is the anticipated budget we'll need. We know because of all the registrations, this is the number of rentals. You do a simple division and that's your, per unit, nice and easy. One, if council or the powers that be did decide to go with that, I would want them to definitely consider having some sort of mandated, whether it be yearly or bi-yearly, recalculation. Rather than, as units are added, they just look at it as, well, that just means the budget goes up. So that way it's, just simply covering what expenses it needs to. I think on the other side, or the other thing to consider is if you did look at something other than just a flat, divvy it up evenly amongst all the units, is possibly having a fluctuating fee schedule to help incentivize, expansion of certain areas of the housing market. So if our biggest problem right now is that we don't have, lower income units or just units, period, in this part of the city, then maybe that area gets, by, you know, some committee say so or something, get special designation, and those landlords, you know, pay half as much, or I don't know, I'm making it up at this point, but you get what I'm saying. You know, if you have something that fluctuates, rather than just throwing a dart at the wall, maybe actually have it, you know, at least attempt to chip away a small bit about that, another goal, that housing-related goal for the city. So that's my, the first 2 cents that jumped into my head. I think Yanni popped yours up first. Or the only one so far.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my comment. I'd really be interested to hear from housing providers what's easiest, since you guys have to integrate it into your business model, and it would just be helpful to hear from you guys how this could most be streamlined. The other question I have is, well, I guess comment question is there going to be a difference in cost between single family home registration and individual units based on square footage, or is it just non-distinct, it's, there's no distinction, it's just per door, and how does that work?
Yeah, at this time it's anticipated to be per unit, so per door.
What do you do in a situation where you have a four-bedroom single house that is occupied by separate leaseholders? How do you distinguish, is it just one fee for the house?
So this is one of the many wonderful things we have gotten to address with the relocation assistance policy. We have competing definitions of rental agreement under state law. It's each bedroom that is rented separately under city code, it is each unit, which would be an apartment or a house. And so we anticipate it would likely be using the city definition of a structure.
Okay, so a four-bedroom house would count as the same as a, like, one-bedroom apartment?
Unless there were different addresses, likely,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
I can quickly answer your question and say that on the surface of it, if it was just a everyone got word really quick around the city that, oh, you know, I'm making stuff up. Obviously, it wouldn't be this number, but $10 for every unit is what I'm going to have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that would be the streamlined easiest.
Yeah.
If the answer to that question of, hey, what's that, what do I have to pay? It's, well, it's probably $10 unless you check all these boxes.
Yeah.
Now it's a, you need to come take this hour-long class to figure it out. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but
no,
you get what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Like, there's, you know, they have to take an extra step of educating themselves versus, you know, via social media and news outlets if it's just one flat one.
Yeah.
Most people, majority of landlords would probably know pretty quick, but doesn't necessarily mean that's the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question,
no,
of course, administratively across the board, that make, that's simple.
One time, same
yeah.
fee for everything.
I don't know if this is going a little bit too soon, but I think there should be a way to calculate the fee structure based off of the services that will be provided through the office. So, for example, Quality Rental Housing Work Group, at the time that they made the recommendation, suggested that the department needed to be funded by $8 to $10 as a per door fee. So we would do, for rental housing inspections, $8 to $10. Then there would be some sort of number that's generated for rental registration system maintenance. And then there would be a number that's tied to that. And then for mediations, or for landlord-tenant services, specifically mediation, education and outreach, that kind of stuff, it would be a certain number that then comprises the entire fee structure. And if for some reason those costs change due to, cost of living adjustments or inflation or some sort of changes in service dynamics, at least there's some way to sort of track how the fee changed and by what sort of sector. I just want to make that recommendation.
Maybe I'm not completely understanding, but what you just said, I think, goes to kind of the general understanding. After we talk about actual structure, then basically the powers that be, not being us, will say, okay, this is the dollar amount that we need for the budget. Therefore, based on this structure that was decided on, that's what the cost of the fee is going to be. But I think more importantly, the main thing we need to talk about today is whether we all want to make the recommendation that it is a structure of just taking that dollar amount and dividing it evenly amongst all units, and there's just a one set flat per unit fee, or if we want to look at some other structure without talking about the actual dollar amount, because that'll be decided later after they figure out the budget.
So I just answered your question.
Just to answer your question, I mean, the flat fee structure does make a lot of sense. Unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily incentivize the production of more housing in larger spaces, especially given that you've got a shrinkage of space. But from an administrative standpoint, it is the most streamlined and effective way of managing that process. One thing, though, that I would like to point out is that we're already starting our budget process now for next year. And so as those fees are then announced, I think it's going to be important to do that at least 18 months in advance of the next cycle where that change occurs. So having a biannual evaluation like Christian was talking about would be very helpful. That way, as we're starting to prepare that information, we can properly allocate resources. And the other question I had about it as well is definition of unit. Is that based on certificate of occupancy date, or because what does that do to units that are construction, and when are they considered a unit?
So we'd have to follow up with Revenue Division in the event a fee was passed to see how they were administering it, because that would likely, the fee money wouldn't be coming into the Housing Bureau, it wouldn't be collected by the Housing Bureau, it wouldn't be assessed by the Housing Bureau. So we'd have to communicate with them to find out.
Is anybody else slated to speak right now?
No. All yours if you want.
Okay. So I think a flat fee, while I understand the sentiment and it may be easiest administratively, I don't think that it's necessarily equitable. So I'm going to recommend that it be a sliding scale based off of budget size and or number of units.
Katrina, can you say that again? Based off of what size? Sorry.
Budget size.
Oh, budget size. So got it.
Budget size, yes. So for those that are larger, they pay a larger fee. For those that are that have smaller budgets, they pay a smaller fee, that kind of thing.
Yoni?
Thank you. So I think that, you know, from my perspective, I think predictability and clarity is important, so people know when they're paying and how much they have to pay. I think we're probably all across the board on the same page about that. I'm not trying to throw any wrenches in the something, but is it worth exploring kind of Class A versus Class B type units with flat fees, but defining Class A as like apartment complex units within a certain square footage, and Class B everything else, and you either pay the reduced fee if you're the smaller Class A or the bigger fee if you're the bigger Class B.
So you're saying based on unit size?
Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially kind of looking in the, I think, forgive me if I'm mischaracterizing what you said, but basically how much, what is your footprint on the city? Right, like how much land are you occupying square footage wise on the city, you know? I guess the concern is like if you charge the same fee for multifamily units, then presumably there's gonna be a cost pass when you pass along costs?
Pass through costs,
right? And if everyone has to pay the same, then that pass through, like for a one bedroom studio, would be the same pass-through as a larger four-bedroom family unit that might have multiple renters in it or might not, but it's just something to consider. Having two, like, I don't want to make it overly complicated, but maybe distinguish between two kinds of properties. Freestanding versus...
Single-family versus multifamily.
Yeah, and single-family have a higher flat rate than multifamily.
But that could dissuade I mean, again, you've got to think of all the continual barriers that have been before.
Yeah.
It could very well dissuade people from continuing to operate those single family homes as rentals.
That's fair.
And so, you know, I mean, being on the multifamily side, you know, I think that probably just to protect the housing stock in general, it makes the most sense to have that fee dispersed equally across all units.
Okay. Yeah. Then I'll keep my mouth shut.
Deborah?
So I think folks might not understand how much property changes hands. And so you, when you start getting into what the footprint is, that footprint could change 7 times in a year. So I see that as almost non-enforceable, and you're pretty much dependent. Then if you throw in Class A, Class B, CoStar doesn't even do Class A, Class B. They do a star system. So then, you know, you have that determination. I could see maybe a distinction between what affordable housing pays versus what the private market pays, since the margins are so thin on the affordable.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm suggesting budget size as opposed to number of units or footprint, because budget size is something that you can take a snapshot of at one particular point in the year. That fee is paid for that year, and the next year it's reevaluated.
Ian?
So,
and that way there's no... sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
Part of what needs to be evaluated is funds after we get to the source. Revenue collected and then the cost to collect that revenue. And every step we take away from a flat fee per unit is going to increase the cost to collect revenue, just because of the more complicated you make it, the likelihood of 100% of the unit owners goes down.
Can you say that again? I think I missed it.
And we're in context of pass-through costs. We're literally talking about the lowest expense there is to operate in a rental property. So if we're going to deviate, my opinion is if we're going to deviate away from just a flat cost per unit, only change should be if you're a part of the federal, local, or city fair house affordable housing program, then maybe the rate lowers. But other than that, you have to start adding complications, then you're going to start adding costs for collection, and you're just lowering the net revenue to the overall product.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, so I guess the thing I would add to that is my concern is that with a property budget, I think we're talking about budgets here, you can do certain things during a year, or you can at least budget for certain things that may or may not happen, like adding a boiler, for example, that could bring your perceived profit, at least in my business with affordable housing, to zero or to negative. So even on the for-profit side, I could see some inconsistencies with how that is then passed on realistically to setting or determining fees. The other thing is just the administrative burden there on both sides of the ledger in terms of the folks, presumably at PHB or at some city agency processing a lot of this, and certainly the housing providers needing to package that. I know that folks do budgeting differently and at different times, so that would be a concern for me as everyone's rushing to get budgets in, not knowing what the market looks like next year, how costs might change, we are often doing multiple rounds of budgeting that end up being revised budgets. So that's just sort of some commentary on that point. I was also looking through some of the materials that were provided, I think, a few months ago in the survey of what different municipalities are doing. And as I was looking through them, I was thinking, you know, like Gresham has a sort of scaled tiered system depending on how many units you have. Boulder also has something kind of similar to that.
Minneapolis has a pretty odd tiered system that I don't totally understand just from looking at the application. But one thing I was thinking about is sort of backing up and thinking about some core principles, and where I think that this would really resonate with council is, you know, what are the priorities that we as a city or a county are striving, or region are striving toward? It seems to me to be density. If you look at residential infill and a lot of the other zoning changes, clearly affordable housing. And so there are probably others that I'm not just kind of off the cuff articulating, but I think that as we're thinking about these, we should all sort of come back to whether or not, you know, a proposal at least aligns with, if not squarely hits those. So with density, for example, I could see an argument that as you have more units, the cost per unit is lower, which I think aligns with Gresham, where, you know, if you have 1 to 2, it's 55 per unit. If you have 3 to 12, it's 45 per unit. Above 200 is only $20 per unit per year. Now, this could be at odds with a lot of the testimony this body has heard about the impact on smaller landlords of, you know, a lot of these policy issues that we've been deliberating. But, you know, I just think if we kind of zoom out or pull back and think about what the city is prioritizing and making sure that we're not at odds with that, it would be helpful for us to get to recommendations and then for the council to push those forward.
Thank you. One thing I wanted to throw out there, I think, I mean, it seems like people, you know, for the most part, at least of administrative ease, or even just call it just general obvious fairness or simple fairness is, you know, you do a flat fee and it's basically, you know, the total budget for what those fees are supposed to cover divided by the total number of units. But there also seems to be some interest in possibly using this fee or adjusting it as a incentive in certain areas. So I'm almost wondering if it might be, it might simplify it if, you know, our recommendation is a flat fee, but also that the powers that be look at adding the waiver of this fee or a discount on it as an added benefit to a lot of the programs that are already in place. Like for instance, you know, there's certain parts of the city of Portland where, you know, the city really wants, you know, additional units, especially affordable housing units. So you go, you buy a plot that's rated at, you know, allowing you to build up three stories. And I can't remember if it's 10% or 20%, somewhere in there. If you dedicate like 10 or 20% of your total, you know, rental square footage or total units to qualify for the low-income housing, they will give you an exemption to the height restriction and give you a whole additional story to add to be approved to add to that. All those programs already exist, and so I would say there's already an approval process, an application process, a whole already administrative system set up to manage and approve those. And I would think if we're looking at incentivizing areas, we already have a system in place to identify those. Maybe this just gets added to that as, you know, an adjustment, either a discount or a waiver of this fee, maybe for a certain number of years or whatever. Let the powers that be that manage those programs make that decision. But that might be, I don't know, I'm seeing it as a little bit of best of both worlds. You know, we have a nice, easy to manage flat fee, but then also through already existing administrative systems, a way to incentivize, add it as an extra bonus to steer housing in the direction we want it. Yeah. And just really quick, Ian, you still have one more, right? No? Okay. So last couple, Laura, then back over to Jamie. Last couple, and we need to get moving because we are about 10 minutes behind schedule at the moment.
So just real quick, we're talking number of units, or, well, I'd like to advocate for that flat fee number of units with some sort of maybe way to say scaling it. But I think I liked what Ian said about maybe not tying it to budget, because budget numbers can really vary year to year, but the units really represent the what we're tracking and are more, well, less likely to fluctuate significantly. I do like the flat fee because my concern would be the complexity adding cost and that cost being passed through to tenants. So that's all.
Jessica?
I just, Andreas, this may not be something that you have now, but if you could look into it. Does the revenue division already track the affordable housing units that are built out through the inclusionary zoning practice? And does the revenue division incorporate their software with BDS's software? So.
No and no.
Oh, okay. That. I mean, I still think the affordable housing exemption is important, or at least reduction across the board. I mean, you've got a much more limited ability to adjust to additional costs.
Yeah, so the inclusionary housing units are tracked by BDS and the Housing Bureau together. The Housing Bureau tracks multi-units as well, affordable units that are funded through the Housing Bureau pass-through funds. It does not track LIHTC, Home Forward funds, or other funds that don't come from the Bureau. So we have kind of a variety of lists, some of which we have, some of which we don't.
Andres, if I could just offer one more item, because I was kind of keeping a policy list, increasing density, affordable housing, administrative ease on both owner and building owner. Jessica, I think you had raised incentivizing units to remain on the market. I wanted to raise the possibility of, and I don't know how this would be incorporated, but thinking about a way to reduce vacancies or vacant lots is one that I was thinking about. I know that this was on one of the different registration packets from somewhere else throughout the country. So the vacancies issue is tough, and I don't think anyone's in the business of keeping units vacant unnecessarily. But vacant lots, and I also don't know if this is outside the scope, but that could be one where, you know, if we're trying to incentivize development, we know that Portland has, especially on the east side, a lot of areas that there may be speculation happening, for better or for worse. You know, I'm not ascribing a normative judgment to it, but just, you know, it is a city policy of getting units built. That could be a consideration. And then the other I wanted to throw out there was consideration of safe housing. So I don't know necessarily how an inspection process would come down the pike, but if there were potential problem owners or however that is identified, that there could be an impact there. So there's sort of an additional stick on, you know, the next year's registration process.
What if instead we call it a carrot and the fee gets reduced for every year a landlord goes without an infraction instead of a stick?
I like the constructive thinking. So to quickly go down a rabbit hole and then plug it, by mentioning rabbit, are you endorsing the carrot? All right. Minneapolis's complex system is in effect trying to get at that, and so it's sorting properties into buckets based off of how many problems, infractions, and variety of ways they have, and then penalizing them for being bad properties or for not being bad properties. They get a discount, and so.
Oh, so those are the tiers.
Yes, and so they have a page-long matrix of different points that will help or hurt you.
You mean like an individualized assessment?
And so they actually yearly evaluate properties, figure out where they rank, and then based off of that determine their fee amount.
So there's mandatory inspections, I'm assuming, there?
I believe so. Most places with registration have inspections.
Sounds complicated to manage, but I'm sure if the City of Portland, the Housing Bureau, considered going down that route, they would take my advice and just reward good landlords instead of breaking out the stick for everyone that hasn't necessarily gotten there. Anyways, any final quick comments on this one? We got to get going.
Mobile Yanni? Home lots, do they count in the registry as well?
A good question. I do not have an answer right now.
And then I just wanted to go to the phone real quick. Margot, you were the only one who didn't speak. I just want to give you a chance if you had any comments.
No, I'm following along. No comment right now.
Okay. So without further ado, commission letters. And Andreas, you have negative 2 minutes. Actually, wait.
I can, really quickly, in your packet, you will see there are two different letters. One of the letters is for council. It would include whatever the commission's recommendation is on fee structure, and then it has some details about the three services we discussed at the last meeting, so extending landlord training, expanding culturally specific tenant assistance, and a voluntary mediation program. So the content of that would go to council, and we'll be discussing this later today, so don't worry. And then a separate letter, which is going to the director of the Housing Bureau, and it has more detailed feedback about those three services, because you all gave very detailed feedback at the last meeting, as well as a complete list of all of the other service ideas that were discussed at the RSC meeting. And so I wanted you to be aware that those two products existed and would be, we will finalize them after today's meeting so that they can go out and inform their respective conversations.
Okay, so we will come back to the fee structure discussion, everything else. We just have one person signed up for public testimony, so we won't need to use that whole half hour. And we'll give us more time to get to continue on the discussion. So, Nico, the floor is all yours, sir.
All right. Good afternoon, members of the commission. My name is Nico Serra. I'm a mixed-race transgender person with disabilities, and I use they pronouns. I have come before the commission today to talk about why it is important that accessibility features of units be included in the city's rental registry. I have been a renter in Portland since 2010. When I arrived here, I was able to walk up and down stairs, but that changed. I started using a wheelchair in 2012, but until last year, I have never lived in an even somewhat wheelchair accessible rental because they are extremely hard to find and they are almost never affordable on a Social Security budget. In 5 of the 8 places I have lived in Portland, I have had to crawl around on my hands and knees or scoot around on my bottom to access my bedroom. At more than one rental, I've had to leave my power chair outside, where it once became infested with rats. It was disgusting and unbearable, and I cannot tell you how frustrating it was to pay $600 to $700 a month and still be so far from having my needs met. It was demeaning, taxing on my body, and completely unnecessary. Stories of making do with what housing we can find are totally a part of the disability culture here in Portland. We do things because there's no reliable way to find accessible housing. It is unbelievably difficult to find housing that is even somewhat accessible. I don't know anybody that lives in a wheelchair accessible apartment or house. The Rental Service Commission has an opportunity to support the dignity and self-determination of people with disabilities, as you can provide guidance about the rental registry. The registry should collect data on the accessibility features of housing units in the city. Data points could include ICC unit types, qualitative information on accessibility features, and barriers to access. This information could be collected by way of a simple checklist or a 2-page guide that the state of Oregon has already developed. People with disabilities deserve better than crawling around on our floors because we can't find accessible units. And the reality is that any one of you could be in our shoes tomorrow. Please add accessibility to the registry list so that we can find the units we need. The disability community needs you to track accessibility and keep that on the registry for as long as the registry is going, because we all deserve a better quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you, Nico. Okay. So we're jumping right back into the fee structure discussion, correct, Andreas?
Yes. So this conversation can be to continue the fee structure conversation, and at some point, it is also fair game to talk about the letters and if there are questions people have or things that they want to bring up from there.
I know it's not necessarily the norm for city committees to necessarily just dive right in, react quickly to public testimony, but I would say, as far as everything else I said about using that fee to incentivize things like expanding housing where we want to, maybe affordable housing, I can't say that I would see anything against also using that as possibly a carrot to incentivize not only outwardly saying, hey, my unit has this, this, and this extra stuff that makes it more accessible, as a, to incentivize landlords to maybe go through the expense of, you know, adding a wheelchair ramp or something like that, if it means that, using this fee could improve something like that. I feel like I would feel the same way about it as using it on the affordable housing side of things. Next. Any other comments or questions on the fee structure? We've got plenty of time for this. It's not like us to, you know, let time go unused. So, Deborah?
Just from the standpoint of a commissioner and what the Bureau currently has on its plate, staff-wise, and the number of changes and trying to develop a program, it being unclear what might stay with BDS, what might come over here, I would encourage, and the knowledge that you need a new computer system to be able to track things, I would encourage us to do something very simple to start out with and then maybe revisit down the road if we feel like there are some additional things that might be done. I would just add on to the comment that Christian made in terms of testimony. I've been involved in several groups trying to get at the affordable, the access that's out there. And there are so many different definitions and so many different qualifiers, and no one really has a good list. And so I can't think of a better thing that this commission could spend a little time on if we added that to the registry. We just, I just think we have to be careful that our definitions are clear from day one. Otherwise, we're going to create a database that is no more useful than what's out there currently.
Laura?
So have we discussed the specifics of the data that this registration system would be collecting?
So that is the next part of the conversation. If you look at
I think that goes...
Absolutely.
I think that's a lot.
I've spent a lot of time working at the work plan, and how I've tried to explain it to myself is what you've all done so far is talking about the services provided and the service levels. So you spent 2 months discussing that. Today you've been talking about the fee structure, and that will kind of wrap up the short-term decisions about rental registration that could be made with the existing registration system we have. From there, in May, we're going to turn it over to BDS to hear about quality of rental housing. And after that, you open a new chapter of the rental registration conversation that would be more conducive to data collecting, a standalone system to collect information. It would bring the conversations you have slated about how that information would be used, how enforcement would happen. So those all will be coming up.
Thank you. Real quick clarification. We're gonna jump back over those other name tag up. Along with the discussion we have scheduled on what data will be collected, and this kind of goes to what Nico was saying in his testimony. Will we also be discussing either who has access or how somebody can gain access to, obviously, I'm assuming obviously it would be different levels of information if that was available. You wouldn't just be able to get, you know, all of a landlord's owner's information, I would assume. But, you know, will that be part of that discussion?
It would be a nuanced conversation on what information is accessible how.
Lori, you put yours down. Okay, I think Deborah was next, and then Jessica.
So I was wondering, and I'm going to ask Yoni to chime in here, before we have the month after next, when we talk about what we're going to collect and who can see it, there's some real fair housing issues for landlords on this. And I don't know, Yoni, I don't know if you look at a list of everything that the city hoped that they could see and then, you know, tell us what we need to be nervous about or not nervous about. But I think you guys could weigh in advance of that discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it okay if I respond?
Please.
So, you know, the one area this previously came up, and I think anybody should feel free to chime in here, is whether a landlord will be responsible for documenting the race, gender, composition of a family. I just don't think that's a good practice to require of a landlord. I think it leads a lot of questions of liability that could be problematic. And ultimately, the data we collect needs to be geared towards the objective of the registry. So it's great to have this data, but you don't know what you need to collect unless you're trying to kind of focus on certain things. So everything's intertwined in that way. I'd be more than happy to chime in with my thoughts on fair housing issues as they arise in terms of asking people to do a variety of things. I think it's important not to jeopardize, not to put people in more liability when they try to comply with new requirements we're discussing.
Jessica?
Actually, you touched on my question earlier, so I'm sorry.
Sure. Ian?
Well, I just wanted to follow up on what both Deborah and Yoni were talking about to get a little clarification. One of the, I think, three services buckets or goals was services that were aligned with culturally specific organizations. And so to that end, I think it's no secret that history of redlining and other restrictive policies have resulted in some pretty troubling, understatement of the month, patterns of how and where people live throughout the entire community and the whole country. And I will say, you know, we are, as a, you know, pseudo-federal agency, required to collect a lot of information about demographics that is sometimes difficult, but also has its benefits in terms of our ability to, you know, review it. And I don't think you're arguing that there isn't a potential benefit to it. But so with that long preamble, can you sort of unpack the concerns around asking? And I will use one example. If a rental application I guess it could be tricky on the application side, but if there was some way that the tenant self-identified one of these categories, would it make you feel more comfortable with that information being passed on, assuming that at the individual level it couldn't be accessed and it was aggregated or disaggregated?
Thanks for bringing this up for a conversation. So the issue that I have in my mind with kind of separate, let me address things one by one, right? So the first question is, you know, what potential problem could develop with a landlord approaching a tenant and asking them about, you know, sensitive information that may or may not be obvious or may not be visible, specifically when it comes to issues like disability, right? I think that, the registration is kind of occurring at different points in people's tendencies, where they may have good relationships with their landlords or bad relationships with their landlords, and to put both the landlord and the tenant in a position where they need to discuss sensitive information about their demographics when there may be underlying issues of tension or no tension, or tension might arise in the future where there is no tension right now, kind of sets up this conversation over Well, of course you knew what my race was. Of course you knew what my family status was, because you asked me. And so I understand the uneasiness there. I think that there's a conversation to be had about whether, and this kind of goes back to the role of the city and how much any particular agency wants to take on a particular, yeah, I know, right? Taking on a particular task. I mean, it's a different thing entirely to account for the city sending out a uniform template that basically asks people to self-identify, right? But then I imagine
like a mini census.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That certainly something that we should discuss. I haven't given it enough thought to have an opinion on it, but it seems to me like something that we could talk about. You know, I think the trouble is also that people don't tend to stay in the same place forever. So when, like, the question is how frequently are you going to ask tenants to self-identify as kind of like this ancillary aspect of the landlord registration? For instance, like, you could ask someone when the registration opens and have them fill out the form, but they might move, or their lease term might be up a year, like within a month of filling out that form, and then they no longer live there. So it's more difficult to kind of assume that whoever's filling out the information remains at the property that they're currently filling out the information at. And those aren't insurmountable obstacles. I mean, same deal with us, right? Like, when people call us to refer fair housing violations, we ask them a slew of questions based on HUD requirements, such as like race, sexual orientation, all these different questions, which are not easy to ask. So we have to collect that too. I don't think it's impossible to collect it. I feel uneasy about putting the landlord in a position where they have to ask for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough.
This is a good conversation, and I would suggest continuing it in June.
Sorry to get off topic.
All right, so getting back to fee structure. Anyone else? Comments, questions, concerns?
I agree with a lot of what's already been said around the table. I like this idea of incentivizing the conduct and the types of units we want. I think, you know, having a flat fee and then offering reductions for certain incentives like density, accessibility, affordability are, in my mind, that's the structure we should be proposing. I don't think it makes sense to do it based on budget. That's just too complicated. I think it's flat and then with reductions.
So, Christina, I'm going to be the first, the person who continues to follow up on other people's comments. That was an interesting one, affordability, which philosophically I don't disagree with. I don't think anyone in the room does. But what do you have an idea of sort of the structure there, or what, how that, because, you know, a violation, whether you have a violation or not, or whether you have a vacant lot or not, is a binary distinction. I don't know that affordability.
Yeah. Sorry, in addition to affordability, I also would add the safety piece, right, if we're doing a inspection program too. So if there's been citations, they should, there's been no citations for a period of time, it's a reduced fee. Yeah, in terms of how are we defining affordability, is that what you're getting at?
Or how you then link it to a potential fee structure amount.
Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, I think, you know, I'm not talking affordability in terms of I offer reduced rent. That's not what I'm talking about, right? I'm talking about some kind of recognized affordability through a tax credit program or through some federal or state or city-based structure.
Which I feel like administratively, if you're going to go down that road, that's kind of the way, at least at the beginning, if nothing else, indefinitely, you kind of have to go, is maybe when it comes time to register and pay your per door fee, if you have your approval that you qualified for whatever affordable housing tax credit, or like I said, you qualified for, you know, by providing these affordable units, you got the exemption on your zoning or whatever, just providing a copy of that then makes it easy for Housing Bureau staff to be able to look at that quickly instead of actually do a full analysis. They just see that, oh yeah, they got that, so they paid the right amount or didn't or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I'll follow up and just say it is interesting. I'm sort of thinking about this on the fly. This notion, I mean, because it is always easiest when it's yes or no, right? Are you
below the tax credit rents, let's say, okay, you're affordable, you don't pay the fee. Are you above it? You're not affordable, you do pay the fee, but there's a big difference in being a dollar above it and $1,000 above it. And I would quibble a bit with, you know, it is easier to say, like, you're double it or you're triple it, which is far easier to me than here's our whole budget, this, you know, long spreadsheet. Yeah. So there could be something there. It might be a political question, ultimately, but I think it's worth capturing, like, how... And it would also get to one of the, you know, goals of maintaining affordability, but also trying to a degree, spread affordability throughout the region. Not perfectly. I see Jessica Grimm is saying, I know that, you know, a condo right or a studio right on here is not going to be a studio in other parts of the city, but just thinking about it.
Go ahead.
Affordability.
You have an hour and a half.
Well, great. I have lots of time then. I was just saying affordability is relative, right? Even with tax credit properties, it's based on zip code. And, you know, it seems, especially when starting out with a program, you want to make sure you're rolling out it as simply as possible. So it's easy to understand for everyone who has to comply with it. From my perspective, I mean, I understand that there are a lot of nuances with that and wanting to add those incentives. And perhaps after the rental registration program is rolling, to kind of reevaluate that, but from an implementation standpoint for the revenue division to decrease the need for administrative costs to be added, to me it makes the most sense for it to state that federal, state, and local programs for providing affordability, and then allow it to be a self-identified option, which is then auditable, instead of having to then submit, here's all my tax credit documentation for that unit. I realize it would be nice to have all of that information on hand, but it's like extra labor on both sides. Whereas if the revenue division could go and just audit independently a sampling versus having to evaluate every unit that comes in. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of ways to get it off of the ground in a really good spot first. Although I understand the desire to incentivize that. Through other means, it's hard to come up with a solid definition of affordability for all areas of the city. So.
You know what's great about being a recommending committee? We can draft that recommendation in a way that says, we would like a flat rate, but we would like the powers that be that obviously have the power to make decisions that's not us. Think about the minutia on how you guys could use the reduction or removal of that flat rate fee as an incentive to further the goals of the city.
And candidly, after this meeting, I'm sitting down and writing this, and that is more or less how I was planning on writing it, which is that there seems to be consensus or close to consensus around a flat fee, start simple, additional considerations. There's interest in the idea of reductions to align with city priorities, which include, and then a lot of things that people have talked about.
See, that's the benefit of, well, if there is one, of spending hundreds of hours in these wonderful city committee meetings. You might have a little inclination of what direction staff is going. Now, I don't mean to diminish what you're saying at all, just to simply put that we can structure our recommendation how we want. We don't necessarily need to solve all the problems with the system right now. We can simply make our recommendation a little more higher level in that this is what we would like you guys to do with this fee. This is how we'd like you in general to calculate it if you would consider that, and put some actual thought into now or in the future something over here too. So we don't, you know, we don't necessarily have to fine tune the details, especially since we don't get to officially make the decision on those details either. So yeah, Yoni, I think you were next.
Yeah, so if this falls in June's conversation, you should just cut me off and I'll stop talking. I think that one thing that's worth tracking with data is we're talking about the idea of maybe mandatory training, and if not mandatory, certainly, I mean, I support mandatory training, but if we didn't go with mandatory, we'd be offering various modules, right? If there's a check-in process for an individual registered housing provider, then there's some way to record who's attending what trainings and what knowledge they're getting. And then compare that if we were to develop some sort of inspection and or I don't know, get information from, you know, just basically cross information on the kinds of complaints coming in, the kinds of infractions being cited, and try to figure out, is the training achieving what it needs to for the people who are attending it? Because we might not get it right the first time, I hope we do. But if we don't, at least you know who's going and whether or not violations are occurring.
So what you're saying is we use this as another form of a carrot to incentivize landlords with reduced fees to get more educated.
If that's what makes it work, sure.
Can I add something?
Please, go for it.
I don't know how difficult this would be, but it seems to me that administrative burden likely been on landlords potentially, but perhaps in addition to a fee that is based off of health and habitability standards and folks meeting those standards, there is a rating system that's attached to that is made available to the public or something. And that, and it, as long as landlords stay in that rating system or whatever category they're in, that is the fee that they would pay.
Do you mean seems a lot. Do you mean a survey type system that's more subjective, or something like basing that rating on inspection outcomes or something like that?
Yes, your second option.
I mean, I would assume administratively it's one heck of a pie in the sky dream to expect something like that right away. But, you know, if there ever was a place to discuss those things, I think that's, you know, part of the reason that this committee exists. So we can flesh that out, and even if we know that our recommendation is no chance that they'll be able to meet us do things exactly how we recommend, doesn't mean we shouldn't recommend it. If, just to entertain the idea, especially since we have time, if a rating system was used, it would have to be fairly complex in that, because it's, you know, creating something like that from scratch is not as real simple grading structure, because if you're going to be truly fair and equitable, you have to take everything into account. So that's possible, you know, pass, fail, issues with past inspections, complaints, if there are any complaints, think complaints that actually turned into real violations, number of those, frequency of those, in addition to how educated that landlord actually actively, you know, get, and all of that. So definitely doable. You know, in a long-term, very difficult way that staff would never be able to do. Sounds nice, but it would definitely be something that'd have to be a long-term, possibly look at it type of a thing. But I can imagine we've already given Matt and Andreas and Stacy and their whole team a bit of a heart attack even considering this in a public forum, but there you go.
I mean, I would refer back to, again, Minneapolis's registration fee structure as something, I don't know the process that went into that, but it seems like something similar went to create that rubric. Also, on a more local level, the process that Gresham described when they explained their mandatory inspections program and how they had a core team meeting multiple times a month, 4 months, to figure out what are the components that are being inspected, to get an idea of what that process would look like.
And not to mention managing the appeals process, assuming someone felt they were given an unfair grade. It would be a very complex system to manage, for sure.
Well, I would say, to the extent that this is an automated system that's not being done with, you know, pen and paper, which is maybe a big assumption, but, you know, there could be some way that is slice and dice based on numbers and some color shading scheme. I'm getting too far into this, but there could be a, I think that there could be a way that takes a data set, and maybe, you know, to Jessica's point, we want to be pragmatic, get this off the ground, and then after a few years, take a look at what's coming in and what the problems are, and that's the point at which you say, oh, you know, we have identified that 5% of units or owners have 80% of violations, and we need to really take a step to ameliorate that. You know, maybe that's the point where that happens. I do think it could be workable, but yes, the building of bureaucracy is definitely something to keep an eye on in this process.
So I'm volunteering Christian to do the pilot program on the rating system. That having been said,
If I'm competing with nobody else, I don't think my fee is going to be within your budget.
I do think that we could get, I guess I would go the opposite direction once again, that we could go to something simple like 5 years in a row, five or less small infractions on an inspection gets you X, and then build it out from there. But I'd really like to see us do what we're doing right, and I'd like us to do less and make sure that we don't have a lot of unintended consequences from things, even though, you know, I get it that there's, you know, I do believe in the carrot incentivize for maybe a couple of really specific things. And I do think that we could get to something where we maybe modify behavior down the road. But I just, as I said before, I just think we need to do a few things well in the beginning and then expand from there. And if, but hey, if Christian wants to pilot this baby, I'm all for it.
You didn't offer much of a carrot.
You're going to need to give me a very big carrot to take on that kind of project. Laura?
So I'm just looking right now at the tiering system that Minneapolis uses for their rental license tiering. I think what I've found in this is that we are so not going to have to reinvent the wheel on so much of this. There's cities out there that have done so much, and I think we would really be served well by looking to them and finding out what worked and what didn't work. The interesting thing about the determining a property's tier, so I had not looked at this before, Andres, I'm sure you've got it memorized, but there are a number of conditions that are checked to determine the tier that goes to what Katrina's talking about with sort of a rating system. In other words, the tiering is based on whether or not you're being providing safe housing and you're doing it, whether or not you're doing a good job on it. Yes, it's complex. No, I wouldn't recommend that we get into this like in our first year, but it's certainly something to look at that another municipality has taken on, and we could certainly talk to them about what works, what doesn't, and still fold in a way to say, you're at the highest tier, so not only are you paying the most, but you're also, we know you've got the most violations. So we're watching you. Christian's watching you.
Yeah. Christian, what'd you get yourself into over there?
But actually, it's worth taking a look at this. It's fascinating.
Apparently, I'm the rental services czar now.
I'm going to call the helpline.
All right. I think it's definitely worth looking at more cities, especially as we get into a longer conversation on what we want the registration system to be here in Portland and what comes after a registration system.
All right. Any other?
So I would.
Oh, yes, you want
to. Yes, I'd like people to give any feedback they have over the letters. So these letters are a little bit different than the previous letters created by the commission for screening criteria and security deposit. So those letters were formal opinion letters for the Rental Services Commission. You all deliberated on these two policies for an extended period of time, and then we had a fleshing out process to have you vet the language and make sure you agreed with the statement that corresponded with your name. These two letters are summary letters, so what is written in this letter is not indicative of how every member of the commission feels, rather it's an effort to summarize the discussion you all had. That said, I want to make sure that it includes any major concerns or points that you think would be emphasized. As a rule of thumb, the council letter is more high level, and the letter to the director gets more into the details and specifics of the programs. But I wanted to give you all a chance, especially since you have time today, to provide input. Again, I intend to finalize these after the meeting, so this is your opportunity to raise concerns, to have conversation about how these summaries are being characterized.
Laura, are you eager to be first, or did you?
No, sorry.
Maybe we give everyone 5 minutes or so to read the letters and go from there.
Andres, what's your time frame for getting these to Director Callahan and Council?
There isn't a strict timeline for the letter to Director Callahan, but my goal was to send letters to Council by the end of the week, given that they would be considered as part of the budget process, which the mayor could release a proposed budget anytime in the next month, really.
Thank you.
Yeah.